columnist for USA Today. You can see all he's up to via the red section of the paper. Keep up online. Visit usatoday.com on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. George, happy Wednesday. How are things in your world?
I'm good. How are you?
Awesome. So, beyond the games, you wrote a piece to me that kind of describes SEC football fans. So you were at Jordan-Hare last week. LSU beats Auburn on a last-second 42-yard field goal by a guy named Cole Tracy. So beyond his status now as a hero down on the Bayou, their fans have taken a very unique step to show their appreciation. Could you kind of elaborate how a small school in Worcester, Massachusetts is benefiting?
Yeah, I certainly can. Cole Tracy is a graduate transfer. He's a senior, graduated last May with a degree in marketing from Assumption College in Worcester, Mass., which is a Division II school. And it's not exactly a powerhouse Division II league either, as far as that goes. He's a guy who won the, I can't remember the name of the award, but there's an award for the best kicker at the FCS Division II and Division III levels. He won that. For whatever reason, they combined the award for across all levels. He won that last year. He's been very, very good. Clearly, he can make all the kicks. And, you know, and kicker is a place where, you know, the level doesn't matter too much. Except in this, you NFL scouts would like to see you make some kicks that they consider pressure-filled in really hostile environments. Now, I think that's a little overdone because all those kicks are pressure-filled if you're trying to win football games, right? I mean,
yeah.
Regardless of who's there. But, you know, the day he had his best day probably as a kicker and had a 53-yarder against Mighty Stonehill College, there were 2,975 people estimated in the stands. So, you know, he wanted to try somewhere else. With the full blessing and encouragement of the Assumption folks, he reached out and said, hey, I'd like to go to some places. And LSU and Oklahoma State were interested, and he ends up at LSU. All that said, he had a 54-yarder, which is a school record for LSU in the opener against Miami. And then he won the game with a 42-yarder as time expired at Auburn, as you mentioned. So even before the game winner at Auburn, and he's 8 of 9 now on the year, even before the game winner at Auburn, he had one of the craziest things I've ever heard of. It started happening. People were starting to click on the Assumption College website and go to like the web donation area and make donations, and you can then do it in honor of so-and-so. And they're doing it in honor of Cole Tracy, and they're LSU fans. So at one point they were doing $54 donations to designate because that's the length of that 54-yard field goal against Miami. Now they're doing $42 donations. They had, through mid-afternoon, their vice president of Tim Stanton texted me a few minutes, about an hour ago, and said they're up to 171 donations from more than $7,000 in Cole Tracy's honor, presumably from LSU fans.
That,
is that not crazy?
That is unbelievable. Hey, it's a great idea.
College football so cool, right? You know, the equivalent would have been, don't forget that when he left Eastern Washington, Vernon Adams, the Eastern Washington folks weren't quite as happy to see him try his talents at the higher level. But the semi equivalent would have been if Oregon fans had like started donating to the general fund at Eastern Washington.
Just
crazy.
Just $1,003 donations or something like that in honor of his number or passing yards. That is just a fantastic story. By the way, as far as the game itself, I mean, a big early game for those SEC West teams. I actually rewatched the whole second half. Each team had 9 penalties, really physical, tough running the ball. I know this might sound as a simple statement. You were there. You saw one heck of a football game.
Yeah, listen, I don't know that it was exceptionally well played, but it was really fun to watch. Sometimes those two things don't have to go together, and a lot of times they do. You don't have to have great performances by either team for it to be eminently watchable. And I thought both defenses played well. I thought Auburn's offense couldn't get on track. Some of that is LSU's defense, which is good, and some of that is just Auburn. You know, they were up 11 probably still early in the fourth quarter and in control and couldn't quite put it away and then let it slip away. And so they're kicking themselves. But meanwhile, Coach Ed Ogeron and the Tigers are really excited about themselves, and they should be. They're 3-0. They've beaten two teams who were in the top 10 at the time they played. And I say it that way because, you know, you can say you beat two top 10 teams, but who among us thinks Miami's a top 10 team, right? And
right.
Is Miami going to be a top 10 team at the end of the year? Let's stack them up at the end of the year and see what the wins were. But it's still a great start for Coach O, who wasn't really on the hot seat, but there certainly was, you know, off-season turmoil about, like, some of the moves he made. It's a great start for Coach O and LSU, and now you have to look at him. And here's the interesting thing. I just booked travel to Baton Rouge for October 13th, and here's why. LSU has Georgia, Mississippi State, and Alabama at home. And do I think that LSU is a playoff contender and SEC West contender? I do not. But they've got those teams at home, and they're going to get their shot.
Wow, that is an amazing gauntlet for those 3 weeks.
But they're at home.
Right.
It's not 3 weeks in a row either, but it's over a 5-week period or something like that. And Georgia is the first one, October 13th. So it'll be my one shot to really see Georgia against anybody until they play Auburn.
No, it goes Georgia, Mississippi State by Alabama. So that's going to be amazing. Talking college football with George Schroeder. So up on Press Row Saturday, as Florida State was getting wrecked by Syracuse, we saw the demolition on Twitter. And what got me was, because Florida State opened the season on Labor Day, in essence, 12 days from after the season started, FSU fans decided they had enough of Willie Taggart. George, beyond the losing the Samford game, could this be any worse of a start for this guy?
Beyond losing to Samford. I mean, they should have lost to Samford. The fact that they struggled with Samford and escaped almost makes it worse, but not quite as bad as it would have been 0-3. This is easily the most disastrous, even at 1-2, which is better than 0-3, easily the most disastrous start of any of those first-year coaches, of Chip Kelly, of Kevin Sumlin, of Chad Morris at Arkansas. I realize that, you know, Chip's 0-4. I realize that Scott's 0-2. Scott Frost is 0-2 at Nebraska. This is way, way, way worse, what's going on at Florida State. It is a terrible start. There appear to be fissures or cracks within the team. And, you know, if they're not there, they're going to start to develop. The fans are up in an uproar. You know, they expected at least incremental improvement from last year, which was a bad year for them. And the expectations are so high there that you run the risk of setting sort of a narrative for your coaching tenure, a really negative narrative this early, and it's hard to sort of dig back out of or rewrite. And so it's a terrible thing.
Yeah, that prepared statement he read did not look good. You mentioned Scott Frost, and of course they're 0-2 for the first time since 1957. I read that was when they played in the Big Seven. They have an injured quarterback who might be coming back, and they're going to the Big House. But it seems logical to say that Frost is going to get more leeway because of the situation he inherited, as opposed to, say, Willie Taggart.
Yeah, no, it's not even in the same ballpark of leeway. Look, Nebraska fans are disappointed, and they really thought they were going to be competitive this year. And I think they thought that Scott Frost would magically turn the tide and they'd be a much different program and then eventually a team. And I do think he's the right guy. It was the right hire. But there were some systemic problems, and there was a lack of talent there. And then they've had some bad luck with the injury to Adrian Martinez, the freshman quarterback. And, of course, they also had bad luck that they had the Akron game canceled because of, you know, significant lightning weather delays in the season opener. But he's got a long, long, long runway, and they're going to be patient. And even if this were a bad season, and I think they're still a bowl team, even at 0-2. And, by the way, they're going to schedule. I don't know if they have scheduled or they're just going to schedule, but they're going to end up with an FCS opponent to replace Akron to help them get to 6 wins if they need it. And it would be either be – I think their bye week is October 27th, or it would be December 1st, which is the championship weekend, which, you know, the Huskers can go ahead and admit they're probably not going to be playing in the Big Ten title game as the Big Ten West champ. So I think they're going to be really patient with him this year. I don't think it's that kind of an issue at all. I think they really sort of see some extenuating circumstances there that Florida State fans don't see, and certainly don't, and certainly there aren't any excuses that are being offered that make any sense for Florida State fans.
Well, I'll tell you what, of their next six games, at Michigan, at Wisconsin, at Ohio State, ouch.
Yeah.
Talk with George Schroeder, USA Today. I heard one of the national writers last week call Tua Tagovailoa an alien. They beat Ole Miss 62-7. Last year it was 66-3. Now they host Texas A&M, who almost beat Clemson. You know, I'm not saying the Aggies have to win this one, but safe to say they doled out $75 million to Jimbo Fisher so he could take a step towards winning this game in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, I mean, look, A&M's played Alabama tough before. I mean, last year it was 24-19. Now, they were never with the, they never had the ball with the chance to score to win it, I don't think. A couple of years ago, they played a really tough game. I mean, so it's not like because of Jimbo Fisher, suddenly this could be a tough game. I do think this. This Alabama team with this Alabama offense is a different type of Alabama team than we've seen. Now, can they drink the rat poison, as Nick Saban described it a year or two ago, and sort of get so full of themselves and the hype that they lay an egg? Yeah, absolutely they can, and maybe that would make this a close game. And I do think Jimbo Fisher's gotten good buy-in. Kellen Mond has developed significantly as a quarterback. How much of that is Jimbo Fisher? How much of that is just he's a sophomore now? I don't know. It's probably a combination of both. And so, you know, the other thing is we've seen Alabama now look tremendous against three pillowy soft opponents, and so this will be sort of the first sort of semi-potential, maybe it could be, I don't know for sure, a test Texas A&M could present. So I think for that reason we're all sort of paying attention to it. I'm not expecting that significant a challenge, quite frankly, and I'd be glad to be surprised because the Aggies certainly look good against Clemson.
Interesting non-conference game last week, not far from where you live at Boone Pickens. Oklahoma State played a couple of softies, and then they pulled away and beat Boise State. And I know in league they still have Bedlam and TCU on the road. Mike Gundy looking for a fifth double-digit win season the past 6 years. But, you know, what are they talking about? Maybe that defense looking pretty good as they welcome in Texas Tech and this kid Alan Bowman, who threw for 600 yards last week.
Yeah, I mean, look, Texas Tech looks, you can talk about it being a system, and it certainly is, but Cliff Kingsbury is also a pretty good identifier of quarterback talent. Pat Mahomes, this walk-on kid that he let show up and start named Baker Mayfield. You know, there were some other, Davis Webb. There have been some other guys. So it's not that surprising that he's discovered another one. And, you know, it took him a little bit of time to wind into round into shape, too. They weren't ready from the Ole Miss challenge. I'd like to see, they'd probably like to go back and play that game in 2 or 3 weeks, but that's not how this works. But basically, it's a typical high-powered Red Raider offense, and their defense is fairly typical, too, unfortunately for them. But the bigger thing is Oklahoma State, you mentioned it, played so well against Boise on both sides of the ball, and that's a huge key on both sides of the ball. Defensively, they shut down the Boise run game. Brett Rippon had a really nice throwing outing, but it really limited them by making them one-dimensional. And when was the last time you talked about Oklahoma State and said to yourself, these guys won a game because their defense has played really well and was kind of, you know, I don't know what the, it's not dominant, but was so good against the run that it made Boise one-dimensional. I can't remember the last time we talked like that.
No.
And all of a sudden you start to, it makes you want to elevate your impressions of what you think maybe Oklahoma State can be. And so you look at the Big 12 and you say, okay, Oklahoma looks like it's a notch above everybody. TCU showed really well in that game against Ohio State, so clearly you talk about them. West Virginia is still sort of sitting out there as everybody's sheep pick to contend, and let that Oklahoma State in there now after we've seen them. And I don't think that's unfair. And I think the Big 12 has a chance to be really fun. Unless you're one of those teams. But if it's you, if it's me, if it's the listeners, the Big 12 could throw some seriously entertaining games out there among contenders who think they can win the title.
Well, I'll tell you what, folks. He wears number one for Oklahoma State. His name is Calvin Bundage. Wow. Ooh. Is he a
yep.
player? Woof. Lastly, Oregon and Stanford, until the past 2 years, I mean, they've really owned the Pac-12 North. You know, Ducks kind of trying to rise back among the contenders, played that super soft non-conference schedule. You know, the Cardinal get Bryce Love back. But beyond stating how good Oregon might be, no question, with game day here, pretty big opportunity to kind of show that they might be legit once again.
Well, it is, and it's sort of a chance to return to sort of national relevance. Now, look, beating Stanford doesn't return you to national relevance beyond that week, but doing it with sort of the game day spotlight on you after sort of a, you know, Oregon sort of after the heady days of 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 years ago, we all got used to Oregon being in the mix every year, and they didn't always get there, but they were right there, and they were one of the favorite game day stops. But it wasn't just because there'd be several thousand people out there before sunup, because it's a Pacific time zone on game day. It was because of how good the Ducks were and how relevant they were. It was the atmosphere, too, don't get me wrong, at game day and at Autzen and all those things. And those things should be hopping this weekend, I would expect, too. But it was how good the Ducks were. And then they hit that, you know, that lull, and they've gone through all the coaching changes. And here they are again, and they're 3-0, and I don't think anybody knows, and probably the Ducks don't either, how good they are or not, just based on the level of competition. If ESPN was on the other end of your phone line right now, they might lay 3 cupcakes out there, just because that's apparently what Mark Jones likes to do, right?
Yep. Was it
Quint Kessenich that was the sideline guy that day? Whoever it was, I don't want to unfairly tar him. And, of course, it was Washington. So Duck fans probably enjoyed that, but that's what they've played, and everybody knows it, and so we don't know how good they are. This is a chance to find out, as you said, and it'll be really interesting to see. And if they were to beat Stanford, then all of a sudden you have to start thinking of them in a much different way. They'll shoot up the polls 5 or 6 or 8 spots. Suddenly you'll start going, hey, well, what about that showdown with Washington coming up? What could happen there? And then at that point, you know, sort of the sky's the limit, at least on paper. We still won't know for sure, but I don't think we know anything about them just yet.
No, and like I said, it's almost like a game of hide-and-seek, and it's ready or not, here they come. Folks, he's George Schroeder, going to do the man cave thing this weekend. Always a pleasure, George. Always appreciate your time and insight. Have a great week. Have a great weekend, and I look forward to chatting next Wednesday.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm with you in spirit. I would love to be out there. You know, there's nothing better than Autzen Stadium when the place is packed and the people are excited and the game is good. So I wish I was there.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I look forward to it. Have a good one, George.
All right. Take care.
Take it easy.